Accession number 17623, Henry Watson, Reel 11.
Mr. Watson, Reel 11. Can we talk for a while about the behaviour of some of the prisoners of war? I'm particularly thinking of thieving and that kind of activity. Was there a lot of it?
There's quite a bit of it, Dud, because when a fella's really hungry, and we all were, there's it's predominant food. Yeah. If you see two or three blokes together, you can bet your boots they're talking about the last good meal I had somewhere. And I used to try and make themselves a good meal up from someplace. So there was quite a bit went on from the Red Cross parcels. I had a system going whereby two of you would share in a parcel or more. So that you got a parcel every week, or you were supposed to get a parcel every week. It wasn't very long, 6 or 7 weeks, I think, was about the most it ever ran continuously. And if there were six of you in a group, well, you got six parcels in that week. And if it was just one of you, well, you just got the one, of course. And you often found that some of the bully boys were prone to helping themselves from the general food box, you know, if they kept your food in. So there was a little bit of that went. There was a little bit of stuff. Stealing went on, you know, basic stealing, where I suppose you walked around, saw something you liked and picked it up. But it was frowned on. But there's no doubt about it, there was a little bit. The worst case that I ever remember, and it was neither nice for the bloke that it happened to or anyone else. I can't remember his name, his rank, or much about him, excepting that he'd been caught stealing. And he went around with the sergeant major at roll call with a notice on his chest, "I am a thief," and another on his back, "I am a thief," so that everyone in the camp knew that he was the Army Fraser tea leaf. I think he was the one I mentioned about the toilet facilities, which was a big hole in the field and in the orchard, as it was called, where the plank across, and I think he was made to walk the plank, and then the plank was shifted, and in he went, and that was his basic punishment. But who authorised that, I don't know. But that's where he finished up.
So internal punishments amongst your own selves rather than the guards. Or that
well, that was amongst severe. That was amongst the blokes themselves. Someone decided that he went into the hole, and that's where he went. We couldn't dish any punishment out as senior ranks. The only thing we could do was to take his number, rank and name and report him to your unit when you got back home, and the army discipline would take over from there. I never had cause to do that, and I don't know of anyone who did go through that rigmarole, but that was the procedure. You are not allowed, of course, to physically punish anybody.
So that must have been for persistent offenders that didn't learn the lesson, you might say.
Well, that was up to them.
Was there any fraternization between elements, prisoners in the camp and guards? I mean, really close fraternization?
Well, I wouldn't say there's any close fraternization. The only reason that you bother to talk to a guard or get to know him is to see what you could wheedle out of him for your own benefit. I suppose I could be classed as that because I did look for a job in the camp as an electrician because I was an electrician in the theatre and it was to get stuff for my own use. So the bloke that I used to work with was Eddie Tiberi. He was the Italian.
We have that actually, you've mentioned that. Were there situations where, it was a form of bribery really, wasn't it?
Well, bribery.
Were there situations where you were able to get certain guards into a bribery condition,
yes.
You might say, where
yes.
they were really under your thumb in that
yes,
sense?
Yes, yes. More so in the German prison camp than in the Italian one.
Which we'll come to, of course, shortly.
Uh-huh.
You're pretty young men, and obviously your health was well deteriorating in terms of weight and so forth. But to be locked away like that, I mean, in a large camp and no ladies, and at a time of life when you'd expect young people to be meeting ladies, how was that a problem with some people?
Well, I think the problem can be answered this way: if you asked one of the lads, which would he rather have, Marilyn Monroe or a pie? He said he'd have the pie every time. I mean, we're too hungry to bother with that.
Medical facilities, did they exist in the camp?
Yes, there was some form of hospital. I never saw it. I was only ever once in a room with a medical officer, and that was for an injection for something. TAB, ATS, or whatever you call it.
Were there medical checks? As I say, you must have been, you were obviously getting weaker in the physical sense, and there must have been danger of diseases attacking the human frame.
That was the only time that I could remember the Italian medical officers.
But presumably you had to become ill in effect.
Yes, if you were ill and you got shoved into the hospital, I suppose you would get attention. Well, you obviously did get attention. But there's no point in putting you in the hospital.
On entering the camp, in the very beginning, was there an initial medical to see how you were?
No, not to my knowledge.
And you received no inoculations or anything
no,
like that? Because
no.
Living so close, cheek to jowl, you may say, would help the...
I can't remember any medical. Either that or my memory's slipping.
We mentioned many of the things that you were getting through the Red Cross, obviously food and other things as well. Were books supplied through the Red Cross or other source?
Yes, there would be some books supplied. Mostly for educational purposes.
Which you mentioned of the various very wide variety of courses
yes.
that were held.
Yes.
So men must have been in effect qualifying themselves in prison camp for later on.
Or that if you had a mind to put your mind to it, you could learn a lot, because there was just about every trade imaginable in the camp. Civilian trade, all right, had been drafted into the army. Air Force or Navy, whichever, and because in Camp 70 there was Army, Navy, and Air Force in the camp.
I should have asked you, which I forgot to do when we were on the medical side. Did you suffer from fleas and lice
yes.
and this kind of thing?
We used to reckon to get one night sleep in three. The first night you were catching fleas, the next night you were catching lice, and the third night you were too damn tired to catch anything. He went to sleep. But the camp was lifting.
And that was obviously very unpleasant for you.
Very unpleasant. Sp- especially when you'd never, first time I saw one, I was going around saying, anybody seen one of these before? I didn't know what it was. It's louse.
And they didn't fumigate or
no.
Try to get rid of it for you?
Not in Italy. The only thing you got off them in Italy, the Italians would say, when the harvest is cut, they will all go away. So whether there was anything in it, I don't know.
Do you know, we have mentioned this as well, you said that in your own knowledge, you can only remember one attempted escape, or escape where the chap was brought back and...
Well, there was two, actually. There's a pair of them.
And that, yes, and they'd been knocked about a bit when they were brought back. Was there, to your experience, was there an escape committee?
I don't think so in Italy.
Hadn't got quite really got as organised.
Hadn't got really down to it.
Were, again, probably this goes into the German experience as well, were there men who received letters from home to say wives had left them or gone astray?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, there was plenty of that. It's a bit bad to take when, I suppose it is anyway, when you're in a position like that.
Do you recall any person suffering in that way? That?
Well, I suppose we all got a share of that. I lost my mother and got a letter from home to say that the man passed on. Well, that didn't go down well at all. So I was just one of the many.
How do you cope with that kind of trauma at that very time when you're in a place where you can't do anything about it and you can't move?
Find yourself a job and get stuck into it. Take your mind off it. Still the same today.
Your pals would help, would they, in the sense that knowing it, they would at least
sympathize? Up to a point, yeah. Well, your pal in the... The nickname for him was your mucker. And you stuck very close together as a rule. He's your best pal. And he helped you out of holes like this. And I suppose you had helped him. And not if he was in trouble that way.
It became extremely close.
There's one thing I remember about friendship is Ted Charlton, Company Sergeant Major Charlton in an RSM, I just forget his name at the moment, was free with the rest of us when the Italians all ran away, the Germans hadn't arrived, and every morning, he was in the company office. Every morning they used to ring up to another prison camp farther up the railway line to see if everything was all right. This particular morning there was no answer. So Ted said to his pal, "Here's my kit, look after it. I'm going up the line to see what's the matter with the other camp." So the two of them set off. When they got close to the camp, they could see that it was surrounded by the German trucks. The Germans were there. So it wasn't much point in doing anything else would get out of it. So they set off to come back home, back to the camp. But on the way down, they thought, well, it wasn't much good coming back to our camp, because if the Germans weren't there then, very soon would be, then we're back at the square one. So he kept on going. And eventually he did get back to England. He got through the lines, across to France, across to Spain, I think it was, and then back home. Well, he used to play football quite a bit in the camp, but he had a bit of cartilage trouble and it used to bother him. So when he got back to England, he thought he would have the cartilage put right, presumably taken out. So he thought that was going to keep him quiet for a while, because things were brewing up for the D-Day landing. Anyway, they got Ted fit, and they got him into back into the unit, and he went on one of the first waves in, they were looking for older soldiers to have more or less a steadying effect on the younger lads that hadn't been in action. So when he was in the desert, his officer had been wounded and he stayed with him. And that's when he got taken prisoner. And the same thing happened in France. His officer got wounded, stayed with him, and he got taken prisoner again. Now, the Germans sent him to the prisoner of war camp somewhere in Germany. And they got him into the office with the rest of the fellows. Got documentation. Got it all had put on, and then he was allocated a hut. That's just a hut to go and more or less live in, living quarters. And there was 24,000, I think, of us in the camp. So, I mean, it wasn't a case of just one or two. He was sent to this hut, he walked in the hut, and the question, similar to, have you come back for your kit? But not quite in those words. He has his mate that he'd given the kit to look after. So Ted finished his time in 4B.
Were there many men that had tried to get away when the Italians...
There was a hell of a lot did off. Most of them got into the hills. And there was an awful lot came back to us in dribs and drabs that were picked up. And I knew quite a lot of the lads. And they said that if you got into the hills, the Italian women would look after you, would shield you, feed you and shield you. Any fellas there, they would put you away as soon as look at you. He said the women were the ones that kept them good. Eventually, I think most of them would get picked up. Some would get home, there's no doubt about that.
You hadn't made a decision to go.
No, I never made that decision to go because I thought I was doing more good by staying in the camp and giving the boys a new service than trying to escape. I couldn't speak German. I hadn't a clue where we were. I'd never been to Germany before. Or Italy, so there wasn't much point of us trying to escape. Unless you know fluent with the language, you haven't much chance.
Was the takeover smooth? What happened between the Italians suddenly stopping and the Germans coming?
Just like you said, the Italians did off. They must have gone off during the night. When we woke up the next morning, there was nobody in the pillboxes. But in a very, very short while, there was. The Germans just came quietly up, surrounded the camp, and stuck a sentry in the box, and you were back.
Was there a marked change in the difference between the Italians and the Germans, the way that they approached you and looked after you, etc.?
Well, it's a hard question to answer because the Germans had just come, they didn't know the setup, and the Italians had done off. They were just concerned with more or less keeping us in the camp until they could get us back onto the rail trucks, which they did after.
So life in effect went on basically as it had been.
Basically the same, yes.
I hadn't asked you, and I meant to at the time, where were the Red Cross parcels kept? Did you have a separate hut, a compound?
Yes, they were on what we call the other side of the wire. That was the compound. It was run by the Italians. It was in their piece of land.
And they kept control of the...
Well, we had our own fellas there that were responsible for them. They used to go to there every day and either counting parcels or dishing them out or putting them in, whatever job there was to do.
What happened to you next after the Germans took over?
We got shuffled into rail trucks again. and was sent on our way rejoicing to Germany. One or two bomb scares, the planes bombing their trains. We got shoved in the side in one place. I think it was Verona. Stayed there for a little while. And then gradually went through till we got to like a little transit camp called Jakobstal. In the distance, I don't know, 2 or 3 miles away, you could see the main camp, which was proper name for it, Stammlager 4B, which is Mother Camp 4B. So we were in Jakobstal.
Whereabouts was this geographically in Germany, or wherever it was you finished?
We were sent to 4B, which was not midway, it was between Dresden and Leipzig, and close to the River Elbe. And the Elbe took a big bend just out, not far from the camp. And that seemed to be a focal point for the RAF planes, because when they used to come over with their heavy raids, they all turned to the left, made up towards, was presumed at the time, Berlin. So that was Leipzig, Dresden, Berlin triangle were in there.
What date would this be?
October or November 43.
Had the journey been a typical prisoner of war journey, crammed into a cattle truck?
Yes. All the way. And I can only remember being let out once. And they were lined along the railway line, and the women folk watching out at one side, and the booms cocked up at the other. Must have been an awful sight.
And did they feed you on the journey? It would have taken a few days, presumably.
No, I don't think we got anything. I don't think we got anything to eat. That I'm not sure about.
And toileted as best you could.
Toilet was generally just a hole in the corner of the cattle truck. If there was a hole, if there wasn't, it was just left as a heap. Oh, it was pretty abominable. There was one little window about 8 inches square with bars on it up in the top corner. That was the only daylight coming in and the only place for fresh air to come in. And there was a permanent queue trying to get their noses just hooked in, hooked outside under the fresh air.
Were you pretty tightly packed?
40 odd in a cattle truck.
Well, even to find a place to rest must have been rather difficult.
Well, if you found a nice place to put your head, someone should have put their foot on it. On the head, I mean.
You reached this transit camp that you first mentioned. What happened to you then?
Well, we got fed then. But we were close to, I think it was a part of a Russian concentration camp. Because not very far, 50-100 yards away, there was a hut. The nearest hut. And we know that there was Russians in there. Just outside where we were, there was a corrugated iron shed. And every morning, there used to be a stream of soldiers, Russians, two carrying a stretcher. And they used to go into this hut and come out again. They walked in with a stretcher loaded and came out with a stretcher empty in the sheet in their hand. They were Russians. And they all went into a lime pit
And you saw this going on?
Oh, yes, yeah. That was a daily occurrence there.
What was your feelings seeing this treatment of human beings?
Here's the Germans coming with a meat ration. You get hardened to these things. And as long as it's not you or someone you know, it's bearable.
Were you able to try to help them in a small way?
You couldn't. No way. Couldn't get near them for starters. In Jakobstal.
Where were you housed or billeted in Jakobstal?
Just in a big shed, like a hay shed.
And you said it was a transit camp. How long were you there?
I think we were there for about a fortnight before we moved on.
And that was when you went up to the...
Then went to the main camp.
Stalag 4B.
4B, yes.
What was it like as a camp? I'm thinking in terms of what we talked about with the Italian accommodation and so forth.
You could see it maybe 2 miles away, but you could smell it from a hell of a long way farther off than that. Roof. So we just had to make the best of it.
How was it organised? It was a big camp, as you say. Was it 20,000 plus?
There's about 20. They reckoned, I can't be exact on this, but they said there was somewhere around about 25,000 Allied personnel. And then there was the Russians as well. There was a compound of Russians. So it was somewhere between 35,000 and 40,000 inmates in that camp.
How was it organised?
In compounds. You just weren't supposed to leave your compound and go to another one.
And each compound was divided so that was it
barbed wire.
Nationally?
Yes. Well, the D North compound, the one I was in, was mainly army. D South compound was mainly RAF. There was another compound, army, and then there was a compound where there was waifs and strays, like such as Italians and any other foreign nationals. They were in there. It was like a foreign legion. Actually, one of my friends, Bill Ducker, was a group commander, a hut commander. He's in charge of one hut there. And he said he had 17 different languages in that hut. And it wasn't very long before they worked out a form of pidgin Italian. Said Italian's easy to learn, it's simple. Well, the pidgin Italian was a little bit of English chucked in with it. And they reckoned that they could converse with each other in this mongrel language that they made up. 17, whew.